420 610 presents Area 45 with Bijani and Creighton.
8 o'clock hour, Area 45. Appreciate you joining us alongside Patrick Creighton. I'm Sean Bijani. Chris Santiago producing and hanging out with us on the phone line is the General John McClain. John, I know you were talking about being in Key Largo the last few days with the documentary and stuff like that going on, but I'm sure you had an opportunity to see and maybe even talk to some people about C.J. Stroud throwing an actual football. Good that that happened now. We can safely say the sky is not falling here in Houston, Texan land. What did you think of that whole situation? You glad that's over for the time
being?
Well,
I was over there. You know, you can I read the transcripts of all the interviews, and I watch online where everybody's shooting everything. And I think it was they wanted to do it because, number one, you don't want the whole off season going up on vacation to be about what's wrong with Stroud's shoulder. And I started reading things nationally. I had people texting me and calling me, asking me on national shows, what's the matter with C.J. Stroud's shoulder? And I said, well, they say nothing. And I go back to when he was knocking down threes on a basketball court at some function. While he had the shoulder issue. So he looked like he was throwing pretty darn well to me on what I saw. And I know everybody's fired up about it. And I'm pretty sure during the vacation time, he'll be working with some of his receivers. He does that every year. I can't remember if they go out to California, if he comes here, what it is. But he's going to be putting in the extra time because just throwing the ball with so many new receivers and Christian Kirk and the two rookies, it's good that he's going to get to throw to them so they can hit the ground running in training camp.
John, your thoughts on Nick Chubb. What kind of role do you expect Chubb to have, and what do you think the trickle-down effect is in the running back room?
I believe that signing Nick Chubb is a sign that they're worried. They're worried about Joe Mixon, who's been was spotted in a boot. I don't know if he's still in the boot. I heard he's not. Looks like he had some kind of operation on his ankle, which he hurt on two hip drop tackles last year. Damian Pierce, he's been hurt off and on ever since his great rookie year. And when they drafted Woody Marks, I thought if that kid, a fourth rounder makes the team. And he could be drafted to potentially replace Pierce. And then, of course, they got Dari Gumbawale, who's an all-around guy, special teams and everything. But Chubb, one of the things that always impressed me about Chubb is how popular and respected he was in Cleveland by his teammates, by the media. I talk to media people that I've known covered the team all the time, and they're not devastated, but disappointed he's not there anymore because he was a great guy. He was a great leader, worked his tail off to come back from that terrible knee injury. Now, last year, he was not the same runner when he came back, and then he suffered that broken foot. Mm-hmm. But they told me he's healthy now. And so often, and I don't know when he hit 29, but when you have major surgery like he did in 23, it's the second year back where you find out if a guy, how much he's really recovered. And so I can't wait to see Nick Chubb, knowing what he brought to the Browns and how everybody thought about him. I think Myles Garrett spoke out really disappointed that he was gone, and they made Chubb available to the media immediately. He's a smart guy. He's a good guy. I can't wait to see him and Joe Mixon. Hopefully Mixon's healthy. I don't know. Maybe he'll be a full go when camp starts. I'm guessing he won't. But the key, of course, is to have him ready for the first game. And if Chubb and Mixon are both ready for the first game, that can be a pretty awesome 1-2 punch.
All right. So talking about that 1-2 punch, that was going to be one of my questions for you tonight, John. Here's how I'll phrase it. Better duo at the end of this season. Will it have been Nick Chubb and Joe Mixon in Texans franchise history or Ben Tate and Arian Foster?
Well, Ben was drafted in the second round because they didn't know what they had with Arian. Arian started the last two games of the previous season, averaged over 100 yards, but they didn't know what they had. So they drafted Tate in the second round. Then Ben had a broken ankle. I can't remember what year it was, but, you know, Arian just burst on the scene, became one of the best backs in the NFL, certainly the best back in Texans history, who I think one day ought to be up in their ring of honor. And so, that's a tough one. Arian's better than Joe Mixon and Nick Chubb.
Yeah. Well, I was really thinking about it just in the course of like an actual season. We were talking about, me and PC last night, the 2011 year. And between Ben Tate and Arian Foster, they combined for just over 2,000 yards rushing.
Yeah, well, and most of that was by Arian. So I'm going to say it was Arian Foster and Ben Tate.
All right, that's fair enough. Fair enough. I do like the signing, and I think you made a lot of really good points. And Chubb and his availability with the media yesterday kind of co-signed all of that, especially the point you made about, hey, this being the second year, you know, after the bad knee injury, Chubb said, hey, you know, I'm kind of over the hump now. And he's still technically on the right side of 32, so very low risk, high reward.
Absolutely. And other, I don't know what they gave him on a signing bonus, but, you know, if he doesn't make the team, he doesn't get paid. And so I would suspect he'll be great for the locker room. Joe Mixon was great for the locker room. Joe turned out to be terrific. I never heard the things about Joe Mixon in Cincinnati that I saw in Houston about how he was with his teammates, how hard he played. I never understood why the Bengals gave up on him. It made no sense because he scored 12 touchdowns his last year there and had over 1,300 yards as a rusher and receiver, and they gave him away for a 7, and they were going to cut him. That was a great deal that Nick Caserio made. Didn't want to sign him as a free agent because there had been competition. Plus, it had driven up the price, and they redid his contract anyway. When they do something like what they did with Joe Mixon and signing Derek Stingley Jr. early, I was reading today about Sauce Gardner trying to get a new contract. Well, that's going to be the benchmark, is Stingley. But the things that Caserio does about getting these guys signed early, it sends a great message to the teammates. You work hard. You're good for the culture. You play your butt off. You can make a lot of money right here. And that is a great message. And redoing Mixon's contract last year was a great message. And so I hope it's going to be fun to watch Nick Chubb, even if he's 75% of what he was in his heyday with the Browns.
You know, John, it's funny you mention that because, you know, the Bengals right now, their best pass rusher, Trey Hendrickson, he doesn't have a new deal. And their first-round pick, who's an edge rusher who they drafted, they're trying to put this funky language into his contract that no other first-round pick has ever had in their contract before. And they're trying to, oh, well, we're going to start with you. And now neither one of these guys are in camp. And it's like, you know, I don't know that guys really want to play there. Mike Brown is a notorious cheapskate. And then you look at the way Houston is doing things, and they are signing the guys. Like you said, they're young players. They're signing their young players. They're not doing like what Dallas does, which is make them wait to the very, very last second and then decide if they're going to sign them.
And you overpay them.
And JJ had made a statement yesterday about how players want to come to Houston. They want to play for D'Amico Ryans. And when you have Nick Caserio, who is rewarding guys who play here, I think that that sends a message that guys around the league pick up on.
Absolutely, they do. And I tell you, you got to give a lot of credit to the McNair family. Are they like the Browns? Can you imagine if Cal and Anna McNair and Janice McNair were like the Browns and they fought so much on money? They'll give Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, and they'll give them big bucks, but then they will cut back on their best pass rusher when their defense was not very good. And the McNairs give them money. They stay out of the way. They don't let finances get in the way. And Caserio keeps them informed about what he's doing. But I cannot tell you any decision off the top of my head in which it came to players and money spent when the McNair said no.
Wow. John McClain, our guest on Sports Radio 610 Hotline. Just given the way that, you know, things have shaken out the last, I would say, few weeks, the Jimmy Ward news today, Ronald Darby retiring, You get a little look at guys in OTAs and mandatory minicamp. Do you have a better idea, John, of maybe what few players, maybe three players? Can you give me three players that maybe we should keep an eye on this training camp that are maybe under the most pressure this camp?
Well, Jimmy Ward would be one of them, of course, because of what he's going to have hanging over his head. Christian Harris, who had become a really good player till he couldn't stay healthy, and he let Henry Toa step in and Wally Pip him, and now he's hoping to be healthy and get a new contract. But the fact is, where is he going to get playing time? They play 4-2-5 almost exclusively. So you got Toa, and Henry became a really good player like last year. And Azeez Al-Shaair, you know, he was exactly what D'Amico knew he would be from coaching the 49ers, and they got some depth. They're not giving Christian Harris a new contract to be a backup. So I would say Christian Harris. And if I was looking over at offense, and I think this sounds kind of weird, but Juice Scruggs was a second-round pick. He has not been worth a second-round pick. He was tried at center. He was tried at left guard. Last year he had to play right guard, and he played well. But the lineup they've been going with, Andrews at center, Tomlinson at left guard, Titus Howard at right guard, with Robinson at left tackle and Blake Fisher at right tackle, and I'm pretty sure that's not going to be the lineup they go with when the season starts. But I think Juice Scruggs, because you were drafted so high, there's a lot of pressure on him, because there's going to be some players, noteworthy players, barring injury, who are not going to make it in the offensive line.
He's a General John McClain with us on the guest line. John, let me switch gears here with you to the Astros. We had Ben Verlander on yesterday, and I asked Ben Verlander, what do you think is more important for the Astros to add? Is it a starting pitcher, or is it a left-handed bat? What do you think is more important for the Astros, starting pitcher
Absolutely
or the bat?
Absolutely a starting pitcher, because they're having to start all minor leaguers. Now, Gordon and Gusto, those guys have gotten better. The other guy they brought up, because we don't know when Arrighetti's coming back. Will he be back before the All-Star break? We don't have a clue because of that broken thumb. The other two had Tommy Johns, and we won't see them for 2 years, if ever. And so you need depth. When they started off the season, you're like, oh, my goodness, the Astros have a lot of depth, even with Luis Garcia and Christian Javier out. Are we ever going to see Luis Garcia again? And so I think they need another starter, because they're having a lot of problems hitting. Like Yainer Diaz, he's hit .299 last year. He's hitting cleanup. Christian Walker had a good game. He's flashed. He's not anywhere near what he was before when it comes to his average. And I know there's things they look at. Other than that, while Jeremy Pena should be on an All-Star team at shortstop.
You're starting.
But as far as a left-handed bat, give me a starting pitcher, because you win with pitching. And you have to make do. And so, are we ever going to see Yordan Alvarez again? I saw where, well, man, he might be taking some swings, and I'm like, geez, I hope he gets a second opinion. So it's amazing they have done as well as they've done with the injuries to the staff and getting so little production out of Yordan Alvarez, who was off to a slow start anyway when his last game was May 2nd. So they're fortunate that they don't play in a tough division. The Mariners are losing. The Rangers, you know, the Rangers have been terrible. At one point this week, the Angels were ahead of the Rangers. And so the only thing we know is last place is going to be the poor old A's playing in Sacramento. So because of the division, they better hope a team doesn't get hot the way they got hot last year. But I believe the Astros' best is still to come.
Yeah, I feel like they're in the midst of that, too. We were talking about it last night. They come into today's game with a 4-game lead, and you know, hell, you might look up here in the next week and a half, and they could have a pretty sizable lead in the division.
Yeah, it is sickening that they've let the White Sox beat them, what, three times this year?
Yeah.
Now you got Fromber going. That is pathetic. pathetic and an embarrassment to let the worst team in the American League beat you three times.
John, so I hope, it's okay. They're up 3-1 tonight. Calm down.
Yeah, well, hopefully that with Fromber pitching, and he'll get his six, and then they'll bring in their top people. Hopefully they'll win this game. And they got Correa and the Twins coming in and show them who's boss. Beat them in 2 out of 3 and increase that lead. Because the only thing the Mariners got going right now is the big dumpers off to one of the greatest hitting starts in the history of baseball for a catcher.
Yeah, well, one of our texters, you know him, Ocho, lets us know about the big dumper, like, literally on a nightly basis. What's wild about Fromber tonight, though, through 3 innings, and he's about to take the mound to start the top of the fourth, dude's got 8 Ks, but he's already thrown 59 pitches. Like, 75% of his pitches thrown in that complete game. What was it, last start or 2 starts ago?
That's what happens when you play ass defense and, and your pitcher's got to wind up throwing an extra 20 pitches because you don't make plays in the field. I don't know why Brendan Rodgers is still on this team. John, he booted another ball today. It didn't cost him a run.
That's supposed to be his strength. He's a former Gold Glove winner.
He stinks.
We better enjoy Fromber while we can because he'll be gone after the season. Just like their other stars that won't do hometown discounts.
Yeah, Shea Whitcomb was leading all of minor league baseball in home runs, and his ass is glued to the bench so I can watch Brendan Rodgers, you know, who couldn't basically hit in a hen house with a fistful of 50s, go out there in the field and boot every ball possible.
Oh, that's a good line.
I do like that. Hey, John, I wanted to get, you know, circle back to the documentary that you were in Key Largo for. You mentioned that you do have a couple of more people to talk to and that whole thing. You've done movies and stuff like that, and I don't understand the turnarounds, you know, in the making them and when we can actually see them. But what's the case with the documentary that's being filmed right now? When's the turnaround?
Post-production takes a long time. And I was lucky enough when I did a movie, Cook County, and the director, David Pomus, let me go with him and see everything involved in post-production, and I thought it was great. And so our goal is to have it ready by Southwest Film Festival in Austin, and then that's in March, and then we're going to have premieres around the state, and then we're hoping when you go to film festivals, South by Southwest is second biggest in North America, and you're hoping a distributor or somebody will buy it and distribute it. You know, we'd love to get it on one of the streaming services. We got enough to make it a series. We could do a whole documentary on the 1960 Corpus Christi Miller team that went 13-1 and had 5 black players, didn't play another game in a 13-1 season with a black player, and what all they went through in winning the state championship with a quarterback, Ramon Gonzalez, who weighed 120, and his head coach made him list him at 130 because he didn't want the opponents to think that they could crush a 120-pound quarterback. And so that one alone, Johnny Rowland was the star and everything that went into it. And also, he liked to get it on like a 30 for 30 or an NFL football life on the NFL Network because players from the PVIF played on every NFL team, 12 of them in the Hall of Fame. 3 of them are still alive, Joe Green, Kenny Houston, and Emmett Thomas. Joe Green and Kenny Houston have told us just incredible stories. And so it will we're teasing it and we're hoping to get distribution. And we want to have a premiere here after South by Southwest. We want to go to San Antonio, Dallas, have all these former players come and support us and get all the media out there to do interviews and help us spread the word on social media. And truthfully, I told my wife, Carol, if I don't make a penny on this, I don't care. I'm having so much fun working with the director, Mark Burns, who used to work for the Oilers and the Gamblers as a photographer, and Rob Lynch, one of my best friends, and Scott Nethery used to work for the Braves as a scout, was a businessman here. We have a blast working together. And I told Carol, if we don't make any money, I'm happy with it. Well, I'm not, but yeah. As long as you're happy, that's all that matters, and I am. And when it comes out, I'll guarantee you it's going to make you laugh and cry. Some of the things that Rob Lynch has gotten from that period, it makes you mad. you know, Mansfield High School, the governor sending Texas Rangers to keep the black kids out of that school, which was mandated by the Supreme Court, and they let them hang black dummies with nooses around their neck from the entrance to the school to try to keep them from away. We got pictures of that. We got Jackie Robinson writing a letter to the governor about how they haven't complied with what they're supposed to. And we're looking for Leon King. He and Abner Haynes, who died this year, were the first black players at a college in Texas. They were from Dallas Roosevelt, and they went to North Texas. They couldn't live in the dorms. They couldn't eat in the cafeterias. But by God, they let them play football. And we're trying to find Leon King somewhere in the Metroplex to talk to him about what that experience was like. Jerry Levias is always great talking about being the first black scholarship player in the Southwest Conference. Anyway, I could go on and on. Thank you guys for letting me talk about it. But the bottom line, Sean, we wanted to, I always tell people after the Super Bowl, it's not tied into the Super Bowl. It's tied in to South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin.
Give us the name real quick.
Well, the working title, as I've told people, is Prairie View Interscholastic League, High School Football in Texas Before Integration. And hopefully by the time it comes out, we'll have a catchy title, although that's all encompassing. But that'll be up to Mark Burns, the director. But that's what we're talking about now, because it tells you what you're working on. And I am having a blast. I feel like I'm 20 years old again.
Love it. We can tell, man. We're happy for you. And continued great luck on the production of the documentary. I appreciate you,
John,
as
always. Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate you letting me talk about the Texans, Astros, and the documentary. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
All right. He's the man. John McClain, the general. Always appreciate him. Coming up next.
Number one, I hope I live to be as old as John. Number two, I hope if I get to live as old as John, I get to do whatever the hell I want like John.
I think you won't have any problem with that. And I don't know that John's as old as you think he is. He definitely doesn't sound it to me anyway.
Listen, I didn't think I was going to get to be as old as I am. So it's just,
You're not old.
I'm on borrowed time as it is.
Oh, geez. Get out of here with that mess. All right. Coming up next, we'll recount some of the things that we discussed with the general. Also, we got to get to this. The Christian Walker piece in The Athletic by Chandler Rome. We'll get you the details there. It's Area 45. Stay put.
Sports Radio 610 presents Area 45 with Bijani and Creighton.
You know, just conversation Sean and I were just having. There is no one in this city, and I mean no one, who has the knowledge, the experience in Houston sports that John McClain has. There is nobody in this city, not now and not ever, will be able to tell the kind of stories that John McClain can tell, because the only other person who could tell stories like that was Barry Warner. And we don't get to talk to Barry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Barry has, you know, he's a lot older.
He's older, yeah.
And, you know, he struggles with the things that he struggles with. And we don't get to talk to Barry anymore, really. We very rarely get to talk to him. We are fortunate that we get to talk to John as often as we do, and we get him to be able to share stories and thoughts and stuff with us. We're not going to have him, you know, forever. I would think that John will continue to come on and join us for as long as he can. And I hope there's no limit on that. But enjoy John while we can, because when John decides he's no longer going to do radio interviews, that era of Houston sports is going to die.
100%.
Because there is nobody left who can share those stories. We're talking like Bill Brown, who former TV voice for the Astros.
Bill Brown has a wealth of knowledge and experience. And
Brownie's retired.
Yeah, he's retired.
Brownie's living his life. He wrote a book. He's
a lot of books.
He's living his life. He doesn't really do interviews anymore.
No, and that's a thing. You know, I told you, it was like there are people that don't do radio or don't do any, you know, entertainment medium to where they can share these stories and experiences. Bill Brown's one of them that came to mind. Greg Lucas is another one that comes to mind.
I don't even know if Greg's still on the market.
He's here chilling.
He's around somewhere.
Retired, you know, enjoying life. But there are few and far between, like, legitimate, like, Houstonians that not only understand, like, the sports history of the city, but the history of the city.
I would ask Ralph Cooper to come on more often, but he's usually on when we're on.
Ralph Cooper is another really great source.
Funny you use that word.
there are probably, you know, maybe we could get to, like, a legitimate two handfuls of people like that. And as you said, they're not going to be around forever.
I think,
you
know, one of the other ones would be Mark Berman.
Berman's a really great one.
And Mark Berman is retired.
Yeah, Berman's a great one. Retired fairly, he looks younger than maybe he is. I don't know.
I mean, Mark is a legend in this city.
But can I tell you something? I was telling T-Mill this, and God love T-Mill, because I wouldn't have seen this without T-Mill. He hooked me up on the HBO Max thing. I got really into, like, the D-Day anniversary this year. I don't know what it was, but I got in a wormhole of watching videos and stuff like that, of interviews of, like, you know, old soldiers, you know, and I was wondering, it's like, man, where are all these videos coming from? Turns out there's a documentary called The Men of Easy Company. So I watched it. It's about an hour and a half, 2 hours long on Max, and I finished it up last night. And I ended it just with this thought that this was clearly filmed, like, at some point in the 90s, not even the 2000s. And here we are in 2025. Let's just say it was filmed in 1995. Well, we just had the 81st anniversary.
It's 30 years ago that it was filmed.
81st anniversary of D-Day, June 6, 1945. And, 44. That's a long time, right? And so these guys that are still surviving, they're like 102, 103 years old. And there's going to come a point in time, maybe in the next 5 to 10 years, where there's no more. And you don't get to hear those stories. And thank God somebody documented these 30 years ago and maybe even beyond. There's countless things out there about them. But the stories that you used to, like, we've all had the grandfather, the grandmother, or the uncle, great uncle, whatever, that used to sit down and hold court in the living room and tell stories. At some point in time, they go away and those stories can never be retold. And one thing that I'm mad at myself about is I've heard every possible story that my grandfather could ever think of and told, and I heard it multiple times over the course of my 24 years on Earth with him. And I'm very mad at myself that I had forgotten the details of a lot of the stories that I would like to share on radio with my friends, other family members, and things like that. And there's nothing I can do about it.
Think about it. You know, when I was a kid and through my teenage years and early 20s, the way that we learned about, you know, eras gone by in the NFL, in Major League Baseball, was NFL films mm-hmm. with Steve Sable.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, you'd always get the classic music and then Ed Sable with the voiceover.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd go through all the, you know, the old seasons and the old playoff. Like, and you'd watch these and it gave you a glimpse into what football looked like in the 60s, in the 70s. When I was a kid watching baseball, if, you know, the Mets were in a rain delay, they'd have these old films from the Mets from, you know, years gone by, where you'd have films on, oh, here's the 62 Mets, right? Here's the 66 Mets. Here's the 69 Mets. And you learned about, you saw, I mean, look, the film was from then. So it's grainy film from the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're telling you the stories of the teams and the players. And this would go on during rain delays. And this is how young kids learned about the teams, because you didn't have a whole lot of access to books that were just on, say, the 65 Mets or on the 66 Astros, right? And you didn't have the internet.
Yeah.
So the way that we learned was watching these 30-minute shows that would be on during rain delays that they used to run in the 60s, and they would run during like rain delays in the 80s. They don't do any of this anymore. All of this old video, all this historic footage, even the old NFL films, there's nowhere to watch it. I don't know if you can even buy it. But these are the films that, you know, these are the stories. Like, you never get to watch the entire film. You've all seen the clip, right, where it's Vince Lombardi. What the hell's going on around here?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or you see Len Dawson lighting up a heater on a sideline. You know, like all these like classic video images. Well, these were all parts of like a whole 30-minute block. And now they're gone. They're just gone.
Yeah, that it's sad to think about that. There's got to be something. Like, you know this because you're a baseball nut like I am. Every Thanksgiving, every Christmas, this is like just thrown in our face on MLB Network and maybe like the History Channel or something like that. But the Ken Burns documentary, baseball. It's on in my house at least a half dozen times throughout the course of a year. I just love it as background because I've seen it so many times. Now, there's got to be something like that that exists for the NFL, you would think. And if not, what a damn shame, because that in and of itself has become like a literal like background, like ambiance during the holidays.
So NFL films
gotta have something like
used
that.
To make like an hour-long year in review for the whole league, and then each team had a year in review.
Yeah, yeah.
Try to find it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It should be more available. But does that, who do you blame? Is that the NFL? Like, there's got to be a third party.
We live in a society where basically everybody under the age of 30 thinks the world began in 2010. And they don't give a rat's ass about anything that happened before that. All the new players, all the young guys who come up, if it happened before they were born, it didn't happen.
Yeah, I get
like,
that.
Like, Babe Ruth doesn't exist. Ted Williams doesn't exist. Ernie Banks, Willie Mays, they don't exist.
Who?
None of this, anything in baseball that happened before 2010 never happened. Or football or basketball. God, the NBA. How many guys in the NBA, you know, can't even tell you, you know, who Oscar Robertson is?
Oh,
who's the
man.
Reason you have free agency, you nimrods? You know, they can't tell you who that guy is. How many baseball players can't tell you who Kurt Flood is?
Dude, I saw this video of the Scatabo fella, the running back in college that was drafted this year.
Cam Scatabo. Cam Scatabo.
Did you see this video the other day? What team?
He's on the Giants.
Giants. Okay, so some production person for the Giants, like, was, you know, had a tablet, gave him, like, an iPad or whatever. And it was, like, you know, one of their website gimmicks like the Texans do on social media. And they put all these old football players, well, not even really old, but older football players in front of him. And they were like, okay, name this guy. And the first one was Megatron, Calvin Johnson from the Detroit Lions. And it was a picture of him in his uniform. And they were like, who's that guy? And Cam Scatabo was like, I don't know. Like, he was like 0-for-5. they gave him Calvin Johnson. They gave him the really good receiver on the Lions right now.
I'm on St. Brown.
He was like, that guy looks familiar. And he's like, you know, I grew up a 49er fan. I really like the 49ers. Like, show me some San Francisco players.
Some John Taylor.
He couldn't name anybody. He couldn't name anybody.
And show him Ricky Waters. show him Ronnie Lott. I know that guy.
You probably, 49er fan, dude, you probably could have shown him Steve Young, like young Steve Young or young Joe Montana, and he would have been like, I have no clue. Former 49ers, you know, at one point. That's just wild. I think it's very generational in what people, especially young people, like are just subjected to now. 713-572-4610.
You show him Dwight Clark. No chance. No chance.
Bro, I have my doubts about Joe Montana and Steve Young for that guy. All right, stay there. It's Area 45.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Area 45 with Bajani and Creighton.
Sean Bajani, Patrick Creighton, Chris Santiago. Hit us up, 713-572-4610. 572-4610. Isak Paredes did not need the Crawford boxes for his latest home run. Hit one 400 feet to the concourse in the left center field power alley. Has the Astros up 4-2 in the bottom of the fifth right now. And now we're headed to, oh, is that only out number two? Okay, so still bottom five, two out. And Jose Altuve on third base. He just legged out a double. And thank God second base was where it was at because he slid a little early. It almost needed to extend his very short legs to get to the bag. He's having himself a night. Jose Altuve is, I believe, two hits, 2 for 2, and two ribs for Jose Altuve this evening. We'll keep you up to date on that as we roll along and have an H-Town postgame show for you a little bit later on. By the way, Framber Valdez, done after five, probably 95 pitches, five innings, seven hits, two earned runs, a walk, and 12, count it, 12 strikeouts.
Yeah, well, he needed the strikeouts because the defense let him down multiple times tonight.
Cameron Aloysius-Smith did not, sir.
Cam Smith did not. But Brendan Rodgers and Jake Myers, they could not say the same.
Yeah.
The Astros did not play great defense behind Framber tonight. But they did put up four runs for him. So that's, I guess you take that and Framber goes out and says, all right, fine, you guys can't catch the ball. I'll just strike 12 guys out.
The rule of four, sir, that is very much a thing.
Yeah, and we started that last year.
It is a thing.
And it has continued this year.
The Astros coming into tonight when they score four more runs are 25-6. I'm just saying.
25-6. That's like 750 ball.
I'm just saying.
Actually, it might even be better than 750 ball.
Yeah, I don't know. While we're talking to Tony, I'll try to do radio math. Let's get out to the phone line, 713-572-4610. Tony, what's up, dude?
Yo!
What's happening?
What's going on, fellas? You touched my heart with that last conversation about the dying of the best, you know, and just growing up with baseball like you guys did, you know, same. Well, you're not as old as me and Patrick, Sean, but you know, it's I agree with that totally. First of all, on Viking Flooring Outlet, real quick, Father's Day weekend, I'll be working Saturday. Got a quality in-stock product blowout going on. Porcelain tile starting at 50 cents for the materials, you know. Hardwood starting at $1.99 a square foot.
Ooh.
Your luxury vinyl tile starting at 99 cents for glue down, $1.99 for your click lock. And your laminate starting at $1.69. All in stock, pallets of it between probably 520,000 square feet of those products of Man, each one.
That's great so, deals, Tony.
Yeah, yeah. We'll be hooking them up, and we're finishing up the last guy that yelled Tony in the store, and he decided to do some quartz and backsplashes, so that's working out well. And they're moving into the house this week, which was great for them. We got them in on time, and that's what they wanted, so...
all you got to do
I'll
is
tell
yell,
you this.
Tony! That's all you got to do.
And now I'll tell you how my mother threw my retirement out, okay, while I was at college. Now, Patrick will understand this, too. And, you know, we collected cards when we were kids, baseball cards. You know, you got the gum, the whole deal on it. But I was like a businessman from the time I was younger. You know, already two paper routes at 11, working in my uncle's meat store and the pork store. You know, I always wanted to make money and this and that. So I also knew the value of the cards, knew the players, and studied sports a lot and wanted to pick up cards for certain amounts and et cetera. So over the course of my ute, you know, the two utes, over the
ute?
Course of that, right, what is a ute? And I collected... what would be a total of, I believe it turned out to be 26 books of cards that I deemed worthwhile versus just the average Joe card and everything like that of good players from Mets to Yankees to this one, going back to like, you know, the Johnny Bench, the Cleon Jones, Pete Rose, those type of days, Ed Cranepool, Seaver starting younger, those type of players were who I was probably the generation, maybe Patrick was watching those players 3 or 4 years later. And but I mean, I'm talking, I also had my grandfather's cards. So two of those books were rookie card books, and they were just those plastic, you know, things that you put it in. It was almost like a case in the loose leaf.
Yeah.
And those had the rookie cards. Okay. And so we're talking Nolan Ryan, Babe Ruth, Ted Williams, you name it. You Pete Rose rookie card. Name it. I had the rookie card, and that was one of my goals, to get the rookie cards. And my grandfather passed me the Mickey Mantle and the Babe Ruth and the Yogi Berra, and they were in like these, almost like these plastic blocks. I was afraid to ever open them and transfer them into a book because I thought the card might disintegrate.
As you should have.
Again,
yes.
Right? So, yeah. And I thought maybe the case one day, no one will have this case ever, and they'll be like, wow, then it's really authentic. So needless to say, it filled two boxes. Like, let's say those hammer mill boxes that you got the paper in. Imagine like triple the size of that, and I had two boxes of them in the bottom of my closet. And Patrick, also, if you remember, they had cardboard cards that were thicker than regular baseball cards, and they were about two times the size of that card, with a large player like in action on that card. And on the back, not even a white back, but on a beige back, almost like a cardboard back, it had the stats and everything.
Yeah.
And that was like, I had that Willie McCovey card. I had cards like that of those guys, like with kneeling on the field with like regular pants, their jersey, a half swing of the bat and a cap on, you know, like stuff like that, that no one would have. Okay. So I go away to school. And I tell my mother, look, when I come home, leave everything in the room the way it is. When I come home and leave the house, I'll, because she knew I knew I was going to move out after college and go with my roommate. And that was that. And we got a house in Oyster Bay. But needless to say, don't touch anything. Okay. I come home, unpack college, this and that. And I open those closet doors. And the only thing missing out of that closet are my two big boxes.
No!
Now, the only... Oh, no, Patrick. The no,
I've told a very similar story, my friend.
What's
wrong with your mothers? What's wrong with your mothers?
I'm 22 years old, or 21, and I fell to my knees in my bedroom, and then I thought, okay, wait a minute. And I looked up in my closet, because that was the only... Back then, we had a cape, which was one level, and then my dad built the upstairs on it with four bedrooms and an attic. And in the attic, he kept his Lionel trains and stuff like that. And, you know, he had all those, of course, not my stuff. But anyway, I figured, okay, she put them in the attic. I'll still be mad, but they were covered, they were wrapped, and they're in things. And even if it got hot and cold up there, I don't mind and whatever. I go up there, nothing in the attic. I go downstairs to my mother like sheet white. And I go, Ma, where's the two big boxes I had in the left-hand side of my closet? Oh, I threw all that S out. And I said, you did what? I said, you didn't put it somewhere else? No, no, I threw all that out. We didn't need that in there. We didn't need that in there. We didn't need that.
We? What is that,
I was
a French
word? College. Right. I was at college. I wasn't in my bedroom. The room was clean and immaculate. There was no need to ever go in the room again until I came back from college. This is my thought as a rational human being. Okay. And, oh no, we threw that out. Okay. And I said, so, but like out, you know, like, come on. Yeah. So, yeah. I went over it in my head millions of times. I don't even know. It's probably in the neighborhood of a stupid guess, $4 to $7 million worth of cards.
Stop right now. Stop it right now.
I mean, guess that. Well, think about all those rookie cards.
Even if
they're not signed, okay, I don't care. I'm thinking on just the rookie cards at auction at Sotheby's in even five more years from now, okay? A million a pop, half a million, a quarter million a pop. Okay, on some of those cards. Because they're mint, cherry mint. They got removed from the top pack and put in a plastic casing immediately with a tool that I had. I didn't even touch the cards when I opened them. I sifted through them with this thing. And then if it was a rookie card or whatever card it was that was special, it went into the casing immediately. Okay? So.
And now it's mulch.
And now it's in a, yeah.
You know, Tony, I have told a very similar story several times on air.
You agree with that estimate, by the way, before you start, Patrick?
What they would be worth today?
I do, because I told PC a story about some guy finding, cards in his grandmother's attic, and he'd estimated it at about $3 million, and it wasn't really anything near what you described. It was just a vast amount of cards, so... Yeah,
now I feel better.
I had a binder, and I had a big binder with all those plastic sleeves for the cards in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I had brought it to a guy to get me evaluation. So we went through all the cards. He wrote all the cards down. And then he's like, "Hey, give me a couple of weeks, and I'll give you an estimate on the whole book." I put the book in the back of the closet. I had a walk-in closet in my room. And I have a parent's house. And then I went off for my senior year of college.
Oh, the same thing?
Yeah. Huh? And the guy gave me an estimate. He gave me an estimate of $40,000. And I'm thinking, $40,000, when I get home, I'm cha-ching, trading these things in. I'm getting a car.
I graduated in 89, so you're talking 94 when you graduate.
90, it would have been 95. So I got the estimate done in 94. I would have been trading them in when I got back, graduated May 95. So from college. And they're gone. In fact, all my baseball cards were gone. All my hockey trophies were gone. All my baseball trophies were gone. Everything in my closet.
What did they do?
All my jerseys were gone. My mom threw them out. She said, you you don't need that stuff anymore. You graduated college. I'm like, Mom, do you know how much money you just threw away? And she's like, they're just baseball cards. And then I showed her the email that had the valuation in it. And she's like, that's probably not real.
Spam.
Right. And she like your mother, denies it to the, she's 81, and she'll deny it to the death that it was worth anything.
Yep.
Okay? They were just stupid cards.
Ignorance is bliss. Tony, we got to run,
like my
man.
My wife walking in the room and saying it's just a game.
Yeah, in October.
Yeah. All right, guys. Have a great night. Love you guys. Big sale this weekend. Come out and yell Tony.
Tony! Right.
Let's go. Tony, Viking Carpet 1, Flooring Outlet. Go. No lie, those are some great prices that he just gave you. Like laminate flooring for $1.69 a foot. Are you kidding me? I'm going to have to go out there this weekend.
Whether you are buying the materials or whether you want them to install it, if you go in there and you just say, Tony, you call up Viking Carpet One, just call him on the phone and go, Tony, you will get the absolute unbeatable best price.
Yeah.
You'll get the Area 45 price. And he does this deliberately. As part of being the sponsor of our show, he is going to give you an unbeatable price because you found out about them on our show.
Coming up next, hot leads, day's top stories. Don't miss it.